Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Tuesday. Really looking forward to Pedro Gomez being with us today. Pedro, in the last 2 weeks, was in Mexico City with ESPN. He was put on the, actually in the last week, he was in Mexico City. He was on the air over the weekend with ESPN on the passing of Fidel Castro. Of course, Pedro, a Cuban-American. And then the Gene Segura trade with the Diamondbacks. And are they going to move Zach Greinke? And there's a possibility of baseball being locked out later this week. So I've got a lot to get to with Pedro Gomez. That comes up at 10:35. And then Michael Fabiano, every Tuesday, if you guys are fantasy football fans, and a lot of you are, and you need to get your lineup set, Michael Fabiano, the news and notes, starts, sits, all that from the NFL Network. He joins us right there in L.A., Culver City to be exact, Michael Fabiano. That is coming up. Last night, I took in some of the Packers and Eagles. It's hard for me to figure Green Bay out. You know, they're a team that Aaron Rodgers has not looked great, and you hear and see some stuff that sounds like there's some divisiveness on that team. And they come out, and Philadelphia is just flat awful. You can imagine today what it's like in Philadelphia. They're just not going to be pleased. And Aaron Rodgers had a big night. All in all, the NFL feels to me like maybe it's turning the corner on the season. Dallas plays Minnesota on Thursday night. That's going to draw a huge number, a gigantic number. Like the NFL's rebirth in the second half of the season. Because, you know, everything was, the ratings were terrible, and they were, and they still are in certain pockets. Like, Monday Night Football is not great. I haven't seen a number yet today. But the numbers just haven't been good. There was the Peyton Manning's no longer here, the Tom Brady's no longer here, the election's no longer here, and all this stuff. And maybe it's just compelling matchups. Maybe it's that the season is too long. Maybe there's just too much football with the Thursday night package. Whatever the rationale is, however can be explained away, Sunday afternoon was awesome. The finals, the final moments of those games were really good. And then the Sunday night game with the Broncos and the Chiefs was terrific. And I thought last night was a pretty good game. And this Thursday, if you can't get a number for Dallas with them being at 10-1, maybe the Cowboys are the reason why the numbers are going to go back up. The Thanksgiving Day ratings with the Redskins and Cowboys were unbelievably strong.
And I think next Sunday you're going to have a good game with Carolina playing Seattle. I know Carolina is down.
It's still
Cam Newton, and you're still playing Seattle. So,
did you notice the hometown heroes have started marketing towards 2017?
I have not.
The Arizona Cardinals started doing the buy your season tickets, get on the list now, and they listed the teams that are going to be here next year. When you're 4-6-1, this is what you do. I'm not being critical of them. It's just they're acknowledging that let's just start planning ahead now. So next year, the Cowboys do come here. Now, depending on when that game takes place, and depending on how it is that the Cowboys finish up this season, and essentially, if Dallas, let's just say Dallas goes on and wins the Super Bowl, every game that the Cowboys will play next year will really be a Cowboy home game. And for years and years here in Arizona, we have faced this. Why are there so many fans of other teams here and protect the nest and all that stuff? And that's easy to do when you win. But when you don't win and you have a team like Dallas who's just crushing everybody in sight, and I make fun of Cowboy fans all the time, been doing it for as long as I've been doing this, for 30 years. You are the most sensitive, overly the top sensitive fan base that's out there. You're also one of the most arrogant at times. Not all of you, but man, some of you, you just go back to Tom Landry and our buddy Danny White and Tony Dorsett, and it's like, those guys aren't there. Your owners screwed the things up until this year. And even the most ardent Cowboy fans would admit, yeah, our owners tends to get in the way. Like today, Jerry Jones went on the radio and said, there's no reason for me to rest up, for us to rest up. Ezekiel Elliott, there's no reason to put extra yards on him. Well, glad to know that you're involved in all that stuff. But the Cowboys are coming here next year. The Giants are coming here next year. The Jaguars are coming here next year. And the Titans are coming here next year. So the Cardinals have already put that stuff out. Even though the Cardinals are still mathematically alive, they're three games back of Seattle. If Seattle had won against Tampa Bay over the weekend, and Seattle didn't look good. But it is a long season, and there are going to be peaks and valleys. And this week they're at home, as Eric said, against Carolina, and it should be a game that they bounce back on. I'm not really sure what to think about the Cardinals here the next few weeks. The stuff of Bruce Arians intimating, hinting that there's divisiveness or not everybody's on the same page or and all that stuff. I don't know. It's just what you do when you don't win. Everybody's got to find answers. And so plays aren't being made because players are not all together. Maybe it's just they're not that good.
And is that something you really want to come public with in the middle of a season with such heightened expectations and such low production at this point? Isn't that something that you just kind of want to internally, we just need to figure this out? But now that it's out there, it's really out there.
Yeah.
And if they keep losing, it's going to be, oh, well, Arian said back after, you know, the Falcons game that there's issues in the locker room.
Issues in the locker room.
I saw someone on Facebook yesterday say, is it time for Arizona to give up on Bruce Arians? And I just put my hand up to my forehead and scratched my forehead and thought, wow, everyone has an opinion, even if they're wrong.
Well, you called me out yesterday and said I've written two dumb things this in the last month.
You have. You have.
ASU moving the U of A game.
Yeah, let's have ASU play U of A in early September.
October.
That sounds fun.
No, I didn't say early September.
Does it matter, though?
Sure it does. Play them. I'm not going to subject people to the 110 degree possibilities. No, when does Michigan play Michigan State? Early in the season.
Right.
Middle part of the season.
But it's not a rivalry game.
They're in the same state. It is a rivalry
but
of sorts.
It's not a rivalry.
It's not as much
game.
As Ohio State.
No.
When does Penn State play Pittsburgh? I mean, it's one of those deals where Stanford played Rice this weekend. Cal played UCLA this weekend. People can say Cal-UCLA is a longtime rivalry. I think that is narrow thinking in this day and age. I am merely suggesting, okay, and this takes me over to the college end, that the ASU-U of A, the so-called rivalry, is just, it's not there. On rivalry weekend, when people play all these games, you have to be ones that think out of the box. Like UCLA-Cal, it's the Bay Area market and it's the LA market. It's business. And they're making big money on that weekend. Rice playing Stanford over the weekend. I watched some of that. It was on Pac-12 Network. I'm sure I was one of five people that gave one rats about Rice.
But you remember 2 years ago in Tucson, it was Arizona versus Arizona State for the Pac-12 South title on Fox or on ABC in a perfect spot on Black Friday. So a lot just depends on... You know, when you have two bad teams,
but is that
of course
spot?
It's going to look like a stinker. I think it is. It's rivalry weekend for a reason.
But how many people are out on Thanksgiving that have never taken part of this?
It depends on what your priorities are. If you're a big ASU and U of A fan, it doesn't matter if they play it on Christmas Day, Thanksgiving, Black Friday,
exactly.
On the moon. People are going to show up.
So play it early in the year is my suggestion, and you. And when I say early in the year, by the middle part of October.
They had a great crowd Friday in Tucson for a 2-8 team against a 5-5 team.
But my suggestion,
5-6
my
team.
Suggestion, and I don't think it's dumb, what was my other thing that you just didn't like?
Is Sam Darnold a Heisman Trophy candidate? This was 3 weeks ago.
Okay, so on that, I put that on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Darnold was lighting it up.
He was.
That day. That
he
day.
Was.
Now, there were people that said, yes, he should be considered. I didn't say he is a Heisman Trophy candidate. I'm asking a question. Doesn't mean I'm giving the answer. Now, if I said, Sam Darnold's a Heisman Trophy, and I'm a voter, right? Like, is Adoree Jackson a Heisman Trophy candidate here at the end of this season? In my opinion, he's one hell of a football player.
He is.
He's had a great season. As I'm sitting here right now, I still have to go with Lamar Jackson, even if Deshaun Watson goes crazy this weekend. I just think it's one or the other.
Yeah, it's a
but
shame,
But I'm
too.
Asking just a question. There's a difference. Are you saying I shouldn't even ask a question to people about Sam Darnold?
But clearly you think by asking that question that you can make the argument both ways that he is actually a Heisman Trophy candidate.
And I would say I disagree that he's not. I could have taken that stance. I never took a stance. So that's my thing. I'm suggesting, like, I'm fine with you poo-pooing U of A, ASU being moved to the middle of the season.
Like, if you came to me after the show and said,
yeah,
do you like chocolate ice cream?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I do like chocolate ice cream. My thinking is, wow, Brad must really feel like chocolate ice cream.
No, you're misinterpreting me.
I am not.
No, Sam Darnold. Did I ever suggest Sam Darnold as a Heisman candidate?
You
no.
just threw the question
I
out
threw
there
it
on
out
Twitter.
There. That's what Twitter's for. Is it the world's largest sports bar?
It is.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Okay, I did take a stance on U of A ASU playing early,
which
in the
is
season.
Fine. I don't have to agree with you. We don't agree on much. That's why we get along so well.
Do we not agree on much?
Some.
Do we agree that tonight, is going to be Alabama 1.
Yes.
Ohio State 2.
Yes.
Clemson 3.
I would have to think so.
Washington 4.
I would have to think so. Okay. That we can agree on.
Would you rip the committee from head to tail if Michigan were still in the top 4 tonight?
No.
See? And I'm with you on that. How do you penalize a team that ended up losing in overtime? And there was controversy involved in that. It was. How do you demote a team that went through that? Now, the flip side is when people rip on Washington's strength of schedule, it's gotten better as the season has progressed.
And if they win Friday playing a hot Colorado team, it'll help them. So.
But then how do they justify Penn State? If Penn State beats Wisconsin and Penn State is not in there, but Penn State beat Ohio State, how do they justify that?
The CFB makes up the rules as they go along, so I'm sure they're going to figure it out tonight.
And again,
that's no secret.
And again, I go back to Barry Alvarez being on there as a complete conflict of interest.
Sure.
It's a complete conflict. It'd be like having, I don't know, Greg Burns sitting there and having a Pac-12 situation. This is only going to fuel the get to 8 teams.
It'd be like Don James, the former Washington coach.
No, that's true.
Being on the panel.
Or Rick Neuheisel,
yep.
who's now, you know, somebody
yep.
who was a coach or was in an athletic administration, that they would still be on there. So I want to get further into that about tonight, because I don't want to sell it short because, look, if Colorado beats Washington on Friday, let's flip it around. If Colorado beats Washington on Friday, and if Penn State beats Wisconsin, and Penn State beat Ohio State, how do you not put Penn State in there as one of the top 4 teams? If Michigan falls to 7 or 8 off of an overtime loss on a controversial call tonight, how do they explain that stuff? But on the other side, I'm going to get further into on the college front, on the college coaching search, some college basketball too, because ASU did play last night, though not for long, and some other things in my mind too, before Pedro Gomez and Michael Fabiano. Sports360AZ.com. Tonight, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona with multiple airings. That is tonight at 6 o'clock, I do believe, before the Coyotes play. Suns are off tonight. Back with more after this timeout. Pedro Gomez in about 10 minutes on the Segura trade and the Diamondbacks possibly looking at moving Greinke. The winter meetings in jeopardy with labor unrest, potentially. Thursday, if there is not an agreement, there will be a lockout of Major League Baseball. We have not had labor unrest in MLB since, I believe, 94. So we'll have Pedro Gomez with us on that front. And then Michael Fabiano at about 10:50 this morning. The coaching circus on the college front. Yesterday, we were heavy into ASU, U of A. Some of you were not happy with me on the uniform stuff of ASU. I'm not going to go too far down that path because at the end of the day, I only care about wins and losses. It's just don't tell me how great your uniforms are and you go from El Paso to Chase Field to no bowl game. Okay, it's really not that hard. You know, just don't build me up with, well, we look really good in the process and we can't even make a bowl game. And you should expect better than that. You really should. We're better than that. Boy, ASU basketball last night. So somebody said to me, yeah, you're excited that we're playing all these big schools. This is a great week in Arizona for college basketball. Kentucky beat up ASU 115-69 last night.
I watched some of that. Boy, Kentucky's good.
And ASU, it's not that they're horrible. They're just really young
and inexperienced. I love seeing ASU play big schools
yes.
in this tournament. It's so much better than we would like to welcome Stony Brook to Wells Fargo Arena.
For years we've
yep.
had this just awful scheduling. So now the other side, oh, man, we just get our ass kicked. Well, guys, you got to build a program.
And you'll be better for it in the long run
yes.
when you play better teams. So
yeah. I mean, so U of A plays Gonzaga this week. I will watch. You know, GCU plays Louisville. GCU lost to a directional school at home last night. I forget who it was. It was some tiny little program, but they got beat at home. Not good. And probably a bunch of players. Josh Braun didn't even play in the second half. A bunch of players that were looking ahead to Louisville coming here to Phoenix this weekend. Understand this. I am about what is best for us in our community, okay? Playing, as Eric said, Stony Brook is not good for us in our community. It just isn't. There's not that many Stony Brook alums. Don't want to see it.
SIU Edwardsville was the team GCU lost to.
SIU, so that'd be Southern Illinois University
at Edwardsville.
At Edwardsville. Any place that ends with Ville, small. You should not lose to a Ville, right?
Unless it's Louisville.
Well, that's true. That's good. Are you going to go to that one Saturday night?
I don't think so.
You're going to Cardinals.
I'm going to Cardinals Sunday, and I think I'm going to take a little road trip with the wife this weekend.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Attaboy.
Go see the Christmas lights up in the northern part of the state.
Oh, that's cool. I may go to that on Saturday night. I say I may go to some things. I'm getting to that point where I'm coaching so dang much. I thought I was done with this, and then this one is turning, he's 12, acting like a 14-year-old, so I'm just at pools and courts, like, all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. I love it. It's just I can't get to games, so I DVR it. My DVR is constantly going. Just, I need to watch this game. And GCU plays Louisville, and also on the same night, ASU plays UNLV. So you have UNLV in Tempe and 5 miles away or 10 miles, whatever it is, you have Rick Pitino, probably 10, 12 miles away, you have Rick Pitino. That's what we want, okay? We can handle this. We need the teams to get better, but we should be encouraging. We should be out at these games. This is the way to show that from a support standpoint, hey, we don't care if you get drilled by 30. Because next year, GCU is going to be able to go into the tournament. So a game like this is enormous for them. ASU playing Kentucky, even though Kentucky crushed them last night. And ASU's got to fly home to play UNLV. And I believe next week they're in New York City. They're doing that just crazy 5, 6,000 miles in a week schedule deal. We want this. We do want this. So I'm looking forward to that. On the college coaching circle, I want to get back into that before we get to Pedro. And there's not much intrigue now that Tom Herman is off. And now that people have accepted that Todd Graham is not going to be fired. And Todd's not going to leave for $13 million being left on the table at ASU. But, you know, it's interesting how things work out. Now Todd is here, the cycle. This has not been a busy hiring and firing cycle. Could there still be moves that are made with schools that Todd Graham could look at or Rich Rod could look at and say, you know, it wouldn't be a bad fit for me to go back to Dallas if SMU or Baylor comes open. I don't think either one of those coaches based on this season could make it happen, but they most certainly, in Todd's case, could say to any school in Houston, I know Dallas and Texas high school football. So any school that's looking just for that on its own merit, I think that he'd be able to get into the conversation. And, you know, you're sitting over there with TCU, and you're just loving all this chaos that's going on down there, right? I mean, you've got – Chad Morris did a whole thing on campus at SMU about domestic violence, and let's stop domestic violence. So that would sell well at Baylor.
Yeah.
And it's the right thing to do, by the way. I'm not just saying that flippantly based on what happened at Baylor. But you're sitting there at TCU saying, just keep on being jacked up because we're going to go clean. You guys should clean up this year, right?
No, I mean, TCU has their own issues. They're a 6-5 football team. But I don't think Tom Herman's going to come into Austin and set the world on fire immediately. I'm not as enamored with that hire as everyone else is.
Why is that?
I think he's a very good coach, and he's clearly a very good recruiter. But he lost 3 games this year. And he lost to 3 teams that he shouldn't have lost to at all. Maybe the Navy game, but you lose to Memphis, they're a decent team. You lose to SMU, they're barely bowl eligible. I just think that I just have to kind of wait and see what happens.
What happens
down
there to our guy Kyle Allen who transferred over?
I don't know.
Houston?
That's a good question because I believe he could be a immediate play plus 2 if he did decide to leave.
See, that's
because he's already redshirted, and I'm sure he's on track to graduate or could expedite the process. It's interesting.
He's an interesting guy to keep an eye on.
Texas has a freshman quarterback that they really like, but if Tom Herman likes Kyle more, would he go to Austin? I don't know. I mean, it'd be a lot of jumping around three schools in 2 years.
Kyle Allen could be a free agent. I mean, he could just go out there and shop as wares. You know, there was Connor Brewer was a free agent.
Ryan Finley at NC
Ryan
State.
Ryan Finley, yeah.
He came in and played immediately.
Quarterbacks that we know here in the Valley that we've seen, that we've covered, that we've done stuff on. I know Todd Graham liked Kyle Allen a lot when he was at ASU. But I think they've got – well, I don't know if they have enough quarterbacks. I don't know if they have a quarterback. So that takes me over to Charlie Strong. So ASU has got to be looking for a defensive coordinator. I brought this up with Paula yesterday. If you're Ray Anderson, it had to have already happened either yesterday or today where you walk in and you close the door and you say, look, you're not going to be the guy calling the defense anymore. And we have to make changes. ASU, if they're waiting for Black Friday's already happened. They got crushed on Black Friday. Cyber Monday's already happened. If they're trying to find a day to bury the story that they're letting go of their defensive coordinator, then, you know, keep looking, guys. This is where you have to make those moves now, today, because this is a 12-day recruiting period that is going on now, today. You don't want coaches being out there representing you if you know that you're going to make changes. There's not a chance that Todd can bring this staff back after the just horrific season they went through. Other than Zane Gonzalez, you know, if I'm looking at the NFL draft this year, we go to the combine every year, okay? DJ Foster, we talked to him last year. DJ just got released by the Patriots this morning, I saw. But how many Sun Devils are going to be sitting there at the combine this year for us to talk to, other than the kicker? How many Wildcats are going to be sitting there at the combine this year? How many NFL players are going to be sitting there for these two universities? Okay? And if you're having to think hard about it as to who is definitely going to make it, you're going to be waiting a while. And should that even be happening here at ASU? Now, Chip Lindsey's names are associated with the Georgia State job. If they lose him as coordinator, they're going to have to figure it out on the offensive side, which I think is easier to do, quite frankly. But now let me go over on the defensive side. So Charlie Strong recruits Texas. Charlie Strong did a great job at Louisville. Charlie Strong is now a free agent who's sitting out there who's available. Does Charlie Strong make sense to bring here to ASU to put on Todd Graham's staff? It's a question that many, many fans have run by me and have floated out there on message boards. Go chase Charlie Strong. Kenny Polamalu got let go over at UCLA. Kenny Polamalu was the offensive guy over there. He's only there 2 years. He's somebody ASU had interest in the past. He can recruit. Do you go chase him? So there's some names of players, a form of coaches, I should say, that are out there that ASU, and I would think Rich Rod's got to look again at his staff. You know, last year he blew out everybody on the defensive side, and they were not appreciably better this year. And there was some stuff going on with the defensive coordinator and some past stuff up at Boise State, some business stuff that sounds kind of messy. I just think that both schools, after you have a season like this and the head coach is not going to be gone, then you have to look at what are we going to do with the staffs and get it figured out in a hurry, in a real hurry. Pedro Gomez is next, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. The Diamondbacks trade of Segura. Does that mean Greinke is available out there? Passing of Castro. Pedro was on the air for that this weekend. He was in Mexico City last week with the NFL. It's a lot to get to with Pedro Gomez. Stay with us. Pedro Gomez joins us now, ESPN Major League Baseball insider, reporter. We talk to him every week during the regular season, but I noticed Pedro has been all over the world here. Your passport took you down to Mexico City. You were on the air about Fidel Castro's passing, and the Diamondbacks make a trade. I would think, and you have MLB looking at a lockout, so I would think of the four things I just threw at you, Castro would have to be the one that pushes your button the most? Yes?
Oh, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah.
That one hits very close to home.
So you were on the air over the weekend about this, and when you heard the news of Fidel Castro passing, Pedro, what went through your mind?
You know, here's the thing, Brad. I know that people saw a lot of dancing and celebrating down in Miami because Castro was dead, and people might be saying, how can you celebrate a death? Just understand that when you grow up as a first-generation Cuban with your parents that had just come from Cuba, the only things you hear in your house are how horrible a person Castro is, and then example after example after example backing that up. It's not just the talk. You talk about somebody who was a tyrant, dictator, murderer. You know, there were firing squads. They killed his own people. There was, you know, if you said anything remotely close to being negative about the government, you were in jail for possibly 5 to 10 years just for saying it. So there's not a lot of people that are of Cuban descent that are here in the States that would have much positive things to say about someone like Fidel Castro. You know, I know he held the title of president, but he was never democratically elected, you know, which was one of the things that he promised to do when he helped overthrow the previous dictator, Fulgencio Batista. So, you know, just reneged on promise after promise and then turned the island into a communist state, almost forcing people to leave the country. And people might say, well, you weren't forced to leave. Well, no, but it's an option of living under communism where you have absolutely no rights, or an option of, you know, moving to a country that was welcoming you like the United States was back in the early 60s with my parents, the Freedom Flights, and it was a no-brainer. And that happened to a lot of people in Cuba until he shut the door and said, okay, that's it, no one else is leaving.
What was your earliest recollection of being told about Fidel Castro? Grade school,
you know, as
middle school?
As a child, four, 5, 6 years old, it was always on. It was always a topic in our house because my parents fled the country, their homeland, and never, ever returned, by the way. And you know, my father has passed away. My mother, I don't think, will ever go back as long as a Castro is in charge. So it's just something that is drilled into you from birth because you were displaced. You know, your family was displaced because of one man.
And you went down, what was it, August, July? I forget.
I was there in March for the Tampa Bay Rays spring training game, and I was there also in December for the Major League Baseball Goodwill Tour. I've been down a few times, all of them because of work.
Right.
And
but you have taken the time to go back to the neighborhoods, right, when you were down there?
Absolutely. Visited the people that knew my father and my mother growing up. And, you know, it's amazing because the everyday common people have such a different viewpoint than the government. And, you know, you I think you could probably say that about any country on the face of the planet. They're very welcoming. They're very open-minded. But the government just doesn't have the same ideals. And therefore, you know, there's all the issues that have gone on between the U.S. and Cuba for the last 55 to 60 years. And there's dialogue now. That's a good sign. That's a positive sign. Mm-hmm. But nothing has really changed.
Have you seen the Kaepernick t-shirt wearing story and what?
Absolutely. Yeah. Of course I did.
Yeah. And how does that make you feel?
Well, I think that it's like a lot of people, I think, that aren't fully up on what has transpired with Cuba. I think that they just, you know, Castro's somebody that almost is romanticized because he was a revolutionary. He was throwing down the previous regime, which was an authoritarian regime, and he was going to help the people. You know, in a lot of ways, he's been romanticized, and I think a lot of people just see the surface of what he's done. Things like, you know, improving the educational system down there. It has one of the absolute lowest illiteracy rates on the planet. Free health care. Yeah, sure, those are great things. But when you're in the fourth grade and you're great at math and all of a sudden they say, well, you're going to be an engineer and you have no choice in the matter. you know, the fact that here's your house and that's where you're going to live. This is your apartment. You know, that'll be it. Do you get a car? Of course you don't get a car. No, absolutely not. And then the firing squads, the murders that went on, the jailings of anybody who was a dissident. You know, when you just look a little bit below the surface, you see all of the atrocities, the human rights violations that have taken place. And those are the things that, you know, Colin Kaepernick, I don't think is quite as educated on as the surface issues that he seems to romanticize.
If ESPN said, we want you to go do a sit down with Colin, you would take it on, I'm sure, with Kaepernick.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. And have you thought about approaching them on this, given your side and his side?
Not to that extent, but it's a great idea, Brad. I may actually do that. The season's winding down. I don't know that Kaepernick he has been willing to take on these issues.
Yes,
we know that.
Yeah.
He does not hide.
Yeah.
So that it very well could be worth looking into. I don't know if he will, but I do think that he could use some education when it comes to the things that Fidel Castro truly stood for.
Right in your wheelhouse, just hammered out of the park. All right, Pedro Gomez with us. you went to Mexico City. So I heard ESPN, or I read somewhere, they sent down over 200 people, employees.
Oh, I heard it was closer to 400.
400 people to cover.
Well, and that includes, that includes the people that are already in the Mexico City Bureau.
In the Bureau, sure.
So it might be 200 that traveled and 200 local.
Could an NFL team play 18 weeks in Mexico City?
No, I don't think so. From a financial standpoint, the ticket prices would probably be too exorbitant. There'd be a slice of the population that could afford it, but it's a very thin slice. And I think that playing a game there maybe once a year is probably the right approach. But in terms of having a team full-time, now the fan base is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that financially, I don't believe it could survive, and I just don't think that it's feasible because of ticket prices and being able to get just everyday fans into the stadium.
Did you feel safe down there? That's why I did.
But you know, it's like anything. Security is enhanced quite a bit during special events.
Right.
You know, it's like if you were in Cleveland during the political conventions. You're going to be safe because nobody wants anything to happen during that time period. Look, I've covered World Series in New York, and you take the train back from either Citi Field or from the Bronx at Yankee Stadium, and there are police at every platform, on every car. But if you go in the middle of July, it's not like that. When there are special events taking place in a city, you always see enhanced police activity, and it's just to make sure nothing happens.
Talk with Pedro Gomez. Let's switch over to the hometown heroes. So the hometown nine trades Gene Segura on Thanksgiving Eve. Did you like this deal?
I did, and if you remember a year ago when they received Segura from the Brewers, I was like, wow, that's a great trade.
Mm-hmm.
Segura is a very good player, and he ended up having the best season of his career. And the fact that it was the best season of his career, he's on the upswing, he's finally figured it out. Or you can look at it and say, okay, maybe this was an anomaly. Maybe he's reached a one season where he's done things he's never done before, and strike while the iron's hot. And I think in this case, a guy like Taijuan Walker, who is a former first-round draft pick, who's 24 years old, who still has four seasons of control, he's not a free agent until the 2021 season. I think that there's such a huge upside with a guy like Taijuan Walker that you had to make this deal if you're the Diamondbacks. And listen, if Greinke bounces back, if somehow Shelby Miller can have just a decent season, and all of a sudden you've got Taijuan Walker possibly reaching a level of success that he has not yet. And let's not forget, it's not easy for a young pitcher to learn the league for a few years. I think that the pluses on this one far outweigh the risks are definitely there, but the Diamondbacks could reap a huge haul. And I've always thought that Taiwan Walker has a huge upside. And pitching in the National League, Brad,
yeah,
let's not forget that. You know, you're, the lineups you face in the National League tend to be six or seven deep, whereas in the American League with the DH, you tend to go eight or nine deep. It's a lot harder to pitch in the American League. And a lot of times you see pitchers switch to the National League and have breakout seasons. And I suspect that Taiwan Walker will benefit greatly from being in the National League, and particularly in the National League West, which tend to have bigger ballparks.
The and I like this deal too. Do you think Greinke is going to be moved, or do you think that this is just a whole bunch of nothing out there about Greinke potentially being moved?
No, I think they're looking at it. I think they are looking at it. And I think it's very difficult when you're not a major market team to tie up one-third of your payroll in one player. I don't care. And even if you are a major market team, it's really difficult to tie up one-third of your payroll in one player and leave two-thirds for the other 24. That's almost impossible to get out of. So I think they will look at trying to move him, but they're going to have to eat some salary, and that's sure, going to be difficult for them to swallow. But that's the only way out of getting out of this deal. I just think that when you look at it from a broader picture, it was a bad deal on all levels. They, it's almost like they were at the dinner table and they were eating with their eyes instead of with their stomachs.
So they'd be looking at top of the rotation, but Walker is not a top of the rotation guy. He might be.
I think he has the potential.
Might be.
But he's not there yet.
Yeah. And then you have, you would look at if Shelby Miller were to bounce back, I feel like that train has already left the station. That's just me. Then you have Robbie Ray and you have Archie Bradley. I mean, they're not done by any stretch of the imagination. But if you're able to trade Greinke, you've got to get back a king's ransom to get him, because it's not a great year in free agency for big name pitchers. It's great for relief for closers. For closers, it's a great year. So this, if you're going to move Greinke, this makes sense to do it. From my view,
agreed. I think that, like I said, it's you cannot tie up one third of your payroll in one player. And that's what they're doing, and that's what they've done. And if you do trade Greinke, look, you're not going to get a dollar on the dollar,
right?
Okay, you're going to have to bite the bullet, and you're going to not get back the equivalency of what he is could potentially do with a better club. So you've just got to face that fact and try to get what you can. Maybe a young pitcher on the rise has to be included, I would think. Maybe someone established that's a middle of the rotation guy, because you've got to be able to pitch on a nightly basis, and that's something the Diamondbacks have not been able to do for several years.
Before I let you go, next week is the winter meetings in Washington, D.C. Are they going to happen? Because we're facing a lockout as of this Thursday. What's your view on, is there going to be a lockout this Thursday?
It very well could happen, yes. But, you know, let's also realize that a lockout in December does not affect the season yet.
Right.
There are still 4 or 5 months until, you know, opening day, and spring training is still mid-February away, so there's still time to get things done. It's more symbolic. But it could affect the winter meetings, there's no doubt. Teams could say, well, why are we going? We don't have a set of rules in place. I'm going regardless, but it could be a very different and unique winter meeting for that reason. I think we probably are looking at a lockout, but I don't think it'll last long.
Appreciate your time as always. Safe travels. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
It's Pedro Gomez, man about many talents and places and things. Good stuff there on Castro. Michael Fabiano on the other side from the NFL Network. All your ins and outs, starts, sits around the fantasy football week number 13. That is next. And now Michael Fabiano joins us from the NFL Network. Happy holidays to you. And, of course, the Hall of Famer weighs on in on all things fantasy related. I'm going to turn it on you right off the top here. What is it that is of interest to you this week on the fantasy front? Biggest interest to you, Mr. Fabiano?
Well, you know where I'm going with that.
Oh, come on. Stretch yourself a little bit. Don't just immediately go to the star, please.
Well, it's a tough matchup. This is a great game against Minnesota, and a lot of people are going to be wondering whether or not they play Dak Prescott. Is Des Bryant going to struggle against Minnesota's defense? That is a big storyline this week. But the biggest storyline from last week is quarterbacks went insane.
Yeah.
When Matt Barkley and Trevor Siemian are scoring 20 and 30 points, that last week was a weird week, and things went sideways, especially at the wide receiver position. And you saw a ton of superstar wide receivers give you stinkers. Amari Cooper, Julio Jones, Allen Robinson. I guess Nuke Hopkins isn't a superstar in fantasy anymore, but he had a bad game as well. I guess people need to make sure that they stick with their studs this week and they don't chase the fantasy points, because there was a lot of players who had really solid games based on production, based on points, that you don't necessarily want to start this week.
Okay, here's the problem I'm facing. I'm not alone in this because I'm in the mailbag. There's a lot of us that have Brady and Matt Ryan, okay? And so last week I'm sitting there a half hour before game time saying, I know I should swap out Brady for Ryan. No, I can't do it. How do you bench Brady?
What do you mean you should? No, that should.
So no. Brady plays and I get smoked because it's the Jets, and I'm thinking, well, he's not going to do well. And what happens with Matt Ryan? I leave a lot of points on the bench. Devontae Adams, I leave a lot of points on the bench. Amari Cooper stunk up the joint. So this is a rant about my team to you. Okay.
You do know that Brady outscored Ryan, right? I mean, it was like a point, but he did outscore Matt Ryan last week.
By a point.
And that's still better than the other way around, friend. And Devontae Adams, people are underestimating him. He might be the most improved wide receiver in the league this season. Right now, he's seventh in fantasy points among wide receivers. He's had a lot of touchdowns, 8 touchdowns. But is he a week-in and week-out lock starter? In some leagues, at this point, yes, he is, because Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind. He was fantastic against the Philadelphia Eagles, who, oh, by the way, had been really tough at home before that Monday night game. So Adams is a guy now that, in this case, you sort of have to separate the name and think about the production, because yeah. – People may be more likely to start Allen Robinson because of who he is, or Nuke Hopkins because of who he is, over a guy like a Devontae Adams, even over a guy like Terrell Pryor, who's been very good this year. He's 8th in fantasy points right now among wide receivers. So Michael Thomas is another one. You have to separate yourself from the name value and play the wide receivers in this case that are putting up the numbers. And there are a lot of wide receivers who people didn't draft very highly that are putting up great numbers this season.
Okay, so you're throwing a lot at me here that I'm getting from the mailbag right back at you. I'm getting questions about Cleveland's quarterbacks because of Terrell Pryor, and RG3 has been cleared for contact. But you have you have Cody Kessler. They have a bye, right? It's like week 13, and they have a bye. But if you're looking at RG3 at any way, shape, or form, given Pryor's production and what's going on with McCown and Kessler, is RG3 even on your radar, Michael?
No, he's not. He's not. I mean, let's be honest. You know, RG3 hasn't been a good fantasy quarterback basically since his rookie season.
Forever. Yeah.
And you've got to look at the depth of the position. Last week, I think it was 19 quarterbacks had 17 or more points. 19.
It's crazy.
It is insane. And some of the names that put up good numbers are not the names that you projected to have those numbers. So now RG3 is not on the radar. Okay, not even close.
Derek Carr's hand injury. Where are you at on that one?
So I guess he had 2 dislocations in his pinky. And I know DC a little bit because his brother works for us.
Ah.
And he told me he's fine. So I'm going to take him at his word. And he did come back in that game last week, and he played pretty well. Didn't look like he had any less zip on the football after he suffered the injury. So I move forward with Derek Carr, who, oh, by the way, is 7th in fantasy points among quarterbacks right now. Pretty good.
Andrew Luck this week.
You play him if he's active. Just keep tabs on the practice reports. You really have to do that. If he practices Friday and he's good for Saturday, then I think you're fine. But because it's a Monday night game, if you have a dead spot on your roster and you want to start Luck because it's a great matchup and it looks like it's going that way, if you want to pick up Ryan Fitzpatrick just in case, you can do that. But keep in mind that as long as Luck is out in the practice field on Friday and on Saturday, because they play on a Monday night, he should be a go this Monday night.
Okay, so then you look over at a place like, let's go to Washington. Redskins are coming here to Arizona. Jordan Reed goes down, but Vernon Davis has been really good back there when he's played. Where are you at on Jordan Reed? Getting a lot of questions on that one.
What a game. And huge game, and he missed some time in that contest against the Cowboys. So, again, it's one of those things where if you have Jordan Reed, you're watching the practice reports, maybe you're picking up Vernon Davis as an insurance policy, but keep in mind, the Cardinals, and the fans there know this, they're good against tight ends.
Yep.
Tight ends do nothing typically against Arizona, and they've held down some of the better tight ends in the league this year. So if Reed is active, you play him, temper your expectations, because Arizona defense is that good against that position.
Okay, Jeremy Maclin coming back. Getting questions on that one.
At this point, he's droppable. Tyreek Hill has looked really good. Macklin's got a groin. Those things can linger. And he, to be honest with you, Brad, what had he done?
Yeah.
He was a mediocre fantasy wide receiver at best. Doesn't deserve a spot on your roster right now unless you're in a really deep league or in a dynasty league.
One last question from a lot of the fans. AJ Green, not on IR, but I don't think he's going to be able to help you out in time for postseason. What do you think on AJ Green?
We'll see. I hold on to him. He's too good to bench because or to drop, I should say, because what if he comes back in week 15 and you're still in the playoffs, or if he comes back in week 16 for your Super Bowl and you dropped him? I guarantee you, I'm in one league where he got dropped and I picked him up, because why not? Why not just hold on to him? And if he's not going to play, well, it's no skin off my back. I just use a roster spot that I probably would have otherwise used for a guy I'm not starting anyways. So if he's been dropped, grab him. Until we hear that he is done for the season, AJ Green needs to stay on rosters.
I had one question from Steve who wanted to know your honest opinion of Brock Osweiler this season.
my honest opinion?
Yeah. Don't make it up. Please be honest. Please be honest.
He's honestly been terrible. Listen, Nuke Hopkins is one of the best and most athletic wide receivers in the National Football League. He's relegated him to basically a bench player in fantasy. Mm. That's hard to do. That's hard to do, man. So Osweiler, at this point, it was a waste of about $70 million on Houston's part. If I was a fantasy owner with Nuke Hopkins, and I am, I'd much prefer that Brian Hoyer was there, although Hoyer is injured. Osweiler has not been able to get the job done, and Nuke has a great matchup this week, a great matchup at Lambeau Field against the Packers, and you probably have to play him. But the fact that you are even questioning whether or not you should play Hopkins against one of the worst defenses in the entire league, that shows you how bad Brock Osweiler has been and how negatively he's affected Nuke's value this season.
With the Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network right there on set, who do you like this week? Who are you staying away from this week, Michael?
Well, quarterback position, I'm preaching starting your studs, and don't go too crazy in terms of chasing fantasy points. So Ben Roethlisberger's got a bad matchup on paper against the Giants. I don't care. He is awesome at Heinz Field. Start him. I've been telling you to start Kaepernick for about 3 weeks now. I'd keep starting him. Matt Ryan's got a good matchup this week. Phillip Rivers has got a good matchup this week. The quarterbacks that you keep on your bench, the guys you don't want to chase the points with, Ryan Tannehill, Blake Bortles. There's one team you don't mess with at the quarterback position, and that's the Broncos. You don't want to play Bortles this week. Andy Dalton without A.J. Green, it's not a good combination. He needs to be on your bench. Trevor Siemian is a guy who had almost 30 points last week against Kansas City. I'm not trusting that he can do that or even come close to doing that against Jacksonville on the road. Running backs that I'm playing this week, Jordan Howard, who would have had a bigger stat line had he not dropped that pass that could have been a touchdown. Spencer Ware, I understand his last couple games he's been very average. I do like the matchup this week in Atlanta. Doug Martin, I told you to bench him last week. Didn't have a great game. I play him this week. Jeremy Hill is a play this week. He didn't have a lot of rushing yards last week, but that was against the Ravens, and that Ravens defense is really good against running backs. Now, players I'm benching, and Arizona fans will like this, a lot of Redskins, and Rob Kelly's one of them. The Cardinals have allowed an average of 6.2 fantasy points per game to running backs this year in their last five home games. That's insane. Todd Gurley has been a guy that I've been really down on over the last several weeks, despite the fact that I loved him coming into the season. That was my bad right there. But Gurley's not someone you can play. Jonathan Stewart's got a bad matchup. So does Devontae Booker. Jay Ajayi, probably have to play him. Don't have to like it against Baltimore. I just mentioned their run defense is really, really good. At the wide receiver position, I've been a big fan of Tyrell Williams for the last 5 or 6 weeks. Play him with a great matchup. Last week, all your Seahawks killed you. They killed you. But I'm playing Doug Baldwin this week because the matchup is very good against Carolina. I mentioned that you play Nuke Hopkins. I like Sammy Watkins as a flex this week because he only had 3 targets. But he caught them all, and he had 80 yards. Mm. And I expect that his snap count will increase this week, and he's got a good matchup in Oakland. Players that I'm benching, Allen Robinson against the Broncos. Randall Cobb, despite the fact that Aaron Rodgers has been so good over the last 5 or 6 weeks, Cobb's numbers haven't been that great, especially if you're in a standard scoring league. Depending on the status of Patrick Peterson, DeSean Jackson is a risk this week. Same thing with Jarvis Landry. Unless you're in a PPR league, you can't play him right now. And, heck, Marvin Jones looked like he was going to be an elite fantasy wide receiver after the first 3 weeks, and since then he's disappeared, and I can't trust him even against the Saints. At tight end, you're starting Jimmy Graham for sure this week, even though he's had 2 bad games in his last 3. I like Kyle Rudolph against my Dallas Cowboys on Thursday night. I'd start Eric Ebron despite the fact that he didn't have a catch last week. And players that I'm benching at the tight end position, and there's some good names on here, Dennis Pitta, Jason Witten, Jack Doyle, and beware of any Redskins tight end this week against Arizona.
Good stuff as always, Michael. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
All right, pal. See ya.
It's Michael Fabiano right there at the NFL Network on set with all the news and notes, getting you ready for the fantasy football weekend. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat.